Well, Jeff Merrick, you know that the NHL is taking things seriously when they break the news of their own domestic violence problems before TMZ does.
Thank you for Canadianizing the website in question. Yes. You're right. I mean, if you want a lesson in getting out in front of the story, then this is the NHL is writing the how-to book right now. It's a Slava Voynov situation, hands down.
Is there a TMZ? Is there a TMZ Canada? Do they have like stories like Geddy Lee drinks a beer?
Geddy Lee, who actually I just found out lives around the corner from me.
Shut up, in Stouffville?
In Goodwood, around the corner here from Stouffville. I just found this. It's funny you bring up his name, because I just found that out last week. And Sportsnet shot some stuff. He's a big baseball guy. I shot some stuff, I guess, in his basement, which is like a
I'm
going
to drive up to the... So you're going to drive up to the America State one day. I'm just going to hear...
Oh, you hear that anyway, dude. You hear that hands down anyway. Love Rush. You know me. That's where you and I take... Usually you and I split. That's the verses in Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Well, we were waiting for this to happen. I mean, we all know that the NHL is not made up of choir boys, even though Bettman's quotes to that effect have been misinterpreted by some. We knew that there would be some kind of domestic violence thing to happen eventually. It happened last year, of course, with Semyon Varlamov. We were all waiting to see how the NHL handled it, and they handled it by saying that Slava Voynov of the Los Angeles Kings has been suspended indefinitely, pending, obviously, the legal investigation, but also the NHL's own investigation into the domestic violence charges that were levied against Voynov this morning in Los Angeles. According to TMZ, he showed up at the hospital with his lady, or a lady. And the hospital workers are the ones that contacted authorities saying that the injuries were pretty severe and that they believed Voynov was the person who may have beat her up. So there you go.
It's not good for anybody. It's not a good situation specifically for the woman in question. Not a great day, not a great discussion topic. Like, you're to your point though, Greg, you knew it was going to come up. It's a tough one for me, because the human part of me says, you know, this is awful and bravo NHL, get out in front of this, suspend him indefinitely. It's the proactive thing to do. But then the other part of me says to myself, hold on a second. One of the cornerstones of our, you know, our society is the presumption of innocence. And listen, it looks bad. It sounds bad. I was told this afternoon the pictures are awful. I'm surprised that they're not already on TMZ already. That this woman took a horrible beating. That this is just awful. And you would assume that the NHL would already have some type of their own internal evidence, which makes them very comfortable levying this suspension. So It happened in lightning speed.
You have to imagine that they do. Yeah,
they have
right?
to. They must. But then the other side of me always says to myself, hold on, let's calm down here. This hasn't been tested yet. So I'm being pulled in a couple of different ways on this one. I'm not, you know, I've always, you know, what's the old saying? Be suspicious of those that are too quick to punish. I don't ever want to be that person. But I temper that by saying, this looks terrible. And if you ask me my gut, oh yeah, it looks awful for certainly for the woman and certainly for Slava Voynov.
Yeah, and
how are you on? I mean,
we hope the woman's okay. First of all, I mean, Jesus, it's just a terrible thing that's happened to her. It's an interesting situation. I mean, obviously, from the NHL's perspective, you're looking at three different things right now from a fallout perspective. The first is, how do people feel you've done on this? And that's the question of the day for us. Puck.blog@yahoo.com, @Wyshynski@JeffMerrick on Twitter, #NVSW, or go ahead and answer the thread in our subreddit, which is r/NVSW on Reddit. How do you feel about this and their reaction to it, the proactive nature of it? I would say about 95% of the people I've interacted with today believe the NHL did good. They feel like they were swift, they were decisive, they were doing things that were completely counter to the ways that Gary Bettman's friend Roger Goodell did things, and they've been applauded for it. Although there is a minority of people that are reacting to this thing today with Voynov, some of them saying it didn't go far enough. Some of them saying suspended with pay is a paid vacation, And then some of them saying, well, hold on a second here. You didn't suspend Varlamov last year when he was arrested for domestic violence. You let him play. The Avalanche let him play. He amassed a pretty good record during that time from the end of October to the end of December. Why now? Because of the Ray Rice thing? Aren't you being inconsistent in your own policy vis-a-vis domestic violence when just a year ago you had a high profile player who wasn't suspended?
If you look at and compare Varlamov and Voinov, you can say one of two things. One, you can say, oh, look, it's the NHL being inconsistent, or you can say, look, it's the NHL learning. I would tend to look at it that this is the NHL learning.
Well, to take a cynical approach to that idea, is it the NHL learning or is it the NHL understanding the way of the world today and knowing that they can't, even if they believe that it's a innocent until proven guilty kind of thing like they did with Varlamov, that they simply can't afford to treat it that way? Is that learning or is that simply just bowing down to what the culture says you have to do?
But I think the culture in this situation is kind of right, though.
Oh, well, I agree.
Right? I mean,
I just wonder if they agree with it or not.
I think they do. I mean, from a human being point of view, you have to. And I think even from a business point of view, like if you look at the CBA, and this is a collectively bargained issue, and I guess you might make the argument that the area is a little bit gray because how do you prove it? But the idea that the NHL Players Association has signed off on the NHL's ability to suspend if it is demonstrated that failure to suspend a player can lead to harm directed towards the NHL. So that's that. So much of this from the NHL's point of view hooks on that little area of the CBA. If they didn't suspend him, would it do damage to the NHL? I think considering what's happened to the NFL, you could say yes, that you could demonstrate that the NHL's image would take a hit. If it gets to a certain extent, you could lose sponsors. So I think the NHL looked at that section and said, look, if we don't get out in front of this, considering the culture now, our league, our brand, our image, and our bottom line definitely takes a hit. Because fans, once upon a time, and I'll just say it, everyone looked the other way at Bobby Hull. Everyone looked the other way with Bobby Hull to the point where there is a statue of Bobby Hull outside the United Center. Okay? Now, you can look at that one of two ways when you go there. You can say, look, that's the legendary winger of Chicago Blackhawks, Bobby Hull. Or you can say, there's someone whose wife left him over domestic assault.
Yeah. That's true. And that's someone who's embraced. Which brings us to another point about Voinov. This is the second point I was going to make. Let's say this thing goes all the way, and while we don't say he's guilty, let's say he is guilty. We've seen what happened to Ray Rice. Could Slava Voinov still have a National Hockey League career with a domestic violence arrest and conviction in 2014?
I thought Michael Vick could never play football again, and I was wrong. But I don't think he can come back. I don't know. If he's found guilty, he will be so radioactive. I don't know any team, and I'm a big second chances guy. I don't know any team that would take him. Listen, man. Apparently, when you see the pictures, and I haven't seen them. This is just going based off of a conversation that I had this afternoon. It's disgusting. Like it's revolting, and it's gonna.
But
completely...
do you think Ray Rice will never play in the NFL again? Do you think he's done?
I don't know football well enough.
Yeah.
I don't. I know that it would. I mean, man, what kind? I don't know. Like, is there a team out there in the NFL? I don't know that. You know, I guess once upon a time was the Cincinnati Bengals that would just take anyone regardless of their background.
Well, for the longest time was the Raiders. Yeah.
Right. Okay. But does a team like that exist in the NFL right now? I can't answer that. You're more of a football guy than I am.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're – well, the Jets, to be honest with you. Took a guy who shot himself in the leg with a gun. They take on Michael Vick. No, I don't think there's a team like that in the National Hockey League. The only thing I would wonder – first of all, I wouldn't have him on my team. What he did is disgusting. And just – I couldn't look the man in the eye and give him a salary. You know, he wouldn't be on my team. But he's a good defenseman, yeah. And there's probably someone out there that would want a good defenseman. And I think at the end of the day, it's a business. And whether it's time served or some giant mea culpa, you know, therapy thing where they make him disappear for a while and get shock treatment or something, there'll be some level of rehabilitation on his part that could eventually lead to a team being like, you know what, he's learned life lessons and blah, 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 and then try to sell it that because they need a defenseman.
Yeah. What is it, the old line by Don King? He used to always say, where there's money, there's forgiveness. Like, we're not talking about we're not talking about a fourth line scrub, right? We're not talking about a guy who's a borderline NHLer. We're talking about Slava Voynov.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good player. Can help every single
good
team
player.
In the NHL.
Two-time Stanley Cup champion. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But the other aspect of Voynov's career is that, like, the Ray Rice ain't going to Canada to play necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. But Slava Voynov might go to Russia.
I think
he might have a home in Russia to play in that league, don't you?
Oh, hands down.
Yeah.
I think I've said hands down like 3 times on the podcast so far. I apologize.
Well, it's because I'm saying a lot of really smart things. The third thing for the NHL is as we mentioned before, the NHLPA. Now, Eric.
Oh, hang on. Let me ask you this. Do they have the stones to file
That's
grievance?
The question. Because here's the thing. Eric Macromella, who's, one of the sports law guys that you should be paying attention to, he's Eric on Sports Law on Twitter. I don't agree with him all the time, but he tends to understand the ins and outs of these things pretty well. So he writes that he thinks that these are very tricky times for the leagues with personal conduct, and he believes that the NHLPA may not be pleased that due process was not respected and grieve the suspension. While a presumption of innocence in some circumstances makes us uncomfortable, it's the cornerstone of our legal system and must be respected. And he says that part of the CBA you were talking about, it's a misconception. The NHLPA did not agree in the CBA to suspending players for suspected domestic violence. The NHLPA agreed to suspension in cases. So I'm guessing what he says is that if this thing, goes to trial or there's a conviction, I don't know what he's talking from, but he's saying that the NHLPA might say that the CBA mechanism for suspension for domestic violence cases was abused by the NHL by doing it so quickly.
So it's only if it goes to – it's only when it goes to trial, only when there's a decision?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and check. But here – listen, I am happy he's suspended because I think in hindsight Varlamov should have been suspended too, even though the charges were eventually dropped. The idea of these guys playing in the league when this thing's hanging over their head – and, yeah, I know that there's a cynicism about it and there's a – you want there to be a fail-safe in case they're falsely accused or whatever, but it's a business, man. And any business might take the same tact. And then if it's a bad decision on the league's part, you deal with it retroactively. I don't know. But the point is this. There is a part of me that finds, from a labor perspective, from a union perspective, the inconsistency of the National Hockey League's decision-making here disturbing. Less than a year ago, okay, Semyon Varlamov was accused of domestic violence. There are photos on the web of a woman with bruises consistent with domestic violence. And they let him play. And the Avalanche let him play. And there were people saying, you shouldn't do that. And the league said, well, we're not going to do anything until we know more. Fast forward a year, and they suspended a guy within hours of his arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Without due process, without a hearing. So I'm with you. Listen, I don't like it. I don't want Slava Voynov patrolling the blue line for the Los Angeles Kings with this hanging over his head. At the same time, though, from a labor perspective, there is a certain amount of inconsistency here that is very hard to justify because the NHL simply can't justify it if it's not in the CBA by saying, well, look what happened to Roger Goodell. That's not a justification from a labor perspective.
That's why I'm split. I'm split on this one. I really am. The heart says one thing. Oh, man, this is bad. Get this guy out of the game. My head says, hold on a second here. There's a process, and there are legal cornerstones that we observe in our society.
Now, to swing it around the other direction, I completely understand what the NHL did here. You're going to have those photos come out. Everyone is going to throw up.
Everyone's going to say this guy doesn't deserve
to pick up a stick again in North America. So I understand their perspective on it. I just think that, and listen, this goes to how many things that the NHL has to deal with, where one time they did something that was extraordinarily short-sighted and stupid and covering their own asses, and then down the line, something else happens even worse, and they're like, well, we'll just ignore the precedent that we set. It happens in supplemental discipline. It happens in domestic violence suspensions. It happens all the time. Because they're so soft-gloved when it comes to certain things, and then a real serious thing happens, and then they throw the book at them, and then they look like a bunch of hypocritic assholes because of it. Why do you think we have so much outrage over, like, the Rafi Torres suspension or the Matt Cook shit? It's because they were so inconsistent at one point, and then something else happens, and then they suspend Rafi Torres for the entirety of the playoffs, which is insane, just to overcompensate for not having come after him stronger earlier.
Do you not look at this, though, and say, well, this is the league, quote-unquote, getting it right and finally setting a new standard? Like, we all applauded when the Department of Player Safety was implemented under Brendan Shanahan.
Your point is taken, and I think from a league perspective, from a fan perspective, we can applaud this and say they got it right. The only other perspective we have to worry about, though, is the legal perspective. Vis-a-vis labor law, vis-a-vis what the CBA allows. It's great that the NHL stepped up to the plate and took care of this thing. It ain't so great that they didn't formalize this in the CBA with the PA, because they didn't.
They're talking tough.
They're saying case by case, we'll throw the – it's all that stuff. And you might be able to justify it based on the language in the CBA, but they sure as shit didn't formalize it, because a year ago we went through this and there was no suspension.
We talked about what would happen if Varlamov is proven guilty.
Voinov or Varley?
Voinov.
Yeah. Listen, I know it gets confusing.
I know. Two Russians, both with a V last name. Oh, boy, how are we going to keep this one straight? These two dumb hosts. As Greg M. asks, though, what happens if Voinov is proved to be innocent?
Well, if Voinov's proved to be innocent, the NHL can justify it by saying, look, this is our policy going forward. You know, we heard our fans. You can even go down the path of saying we heard the women in our audience proclaim how important this issue is to them. And we owe it to them to be proactive. And we owe it to the alleged victim to be proactive. And they could justify it. Why? Because conversely, are they vindicated for not having suspended Varlamov? Like, do they look good because of that? I don't think they'd look good. Just because the charges were dropped. It's not as if he was found innocent. The charges were dropped. There's reasonable doubt.
It was never tested.
Yeah.
So we don't know. So that's all based on how you feel. I was not in the room when the alleged incident happened. I don't know. That's why I'm not a rush to judgment quick guy. Listen, man, the Voinov thing looks terrible and sounds awful. And my gut says he's guilty to high heaven, but I don't know that.
If you look at the NHL charter, there are mechanisms in place for Bettman to basically do anything to anybody who tarnishes the reputation of the league. It's pretty much how it works. I don't know if that necessarily runs to suspension, but it definitely runs to financial penalties. And that's the aspect of it that I kind of sympathize with the NHL for. In this climate, where you're seeing the NFL's reputation maligned at every turn because of what happened with domestic violence, could they, from a business perspective, do anything but what they did today? Did Voinov tarnish the reputation of the league by even getting entangled in this stuff? It's legitimate questions.
John Shannon's with us. He's been on this all day long and was on Hockey Central at noon today for an hour. John Shannon, of course, from Sportsnet. No stranger to this podcast. And John, the QOD, and good afternoon, by the way, sir. The QOD today is, how do you feel the NHL handled the Voinov situation? They got out in front of it, immediate suspension, you know, before it appeared on message boards and TMZ. How do you feel the NHL handled this one?
Well, first of all, hello to you and Greg.
Hello.
I think they handle it the only way they could based on what public perception is right now, and I just caught the tail end of what Greg was talking about. They had the teams had all been told that this is what was going to happen at the last board meeting. Gary stood up and told them, we are going to have zero tolerance. We are going to be proactive on this situation. We're going to use every available word in the collective bargaining agreement to make sure we handle a situation if it's a player, or we're going to be able to even be more adamant if it's a member of a senior executive or an owner. So from that perspective, I think that they did the only thing they could do based on where the climate is in North America right now.
But could they use the climate in North America argument if the NHLPA comes back and says, less than a year ago, you let Semyon Varlamov continue playing, his team let him continue playing, and now you've turned around and suspended a guy before he even had a court date? Could they say that and justify suspending him when there's precedent recently that they'd allow a guy on domestic violence charges to keep playing?
I guess my answer to that is they could have. But we would have been the public, and probably most of the media would have been all over them even more, Greg. They didn't pull that clause out of the collective bargaining agreement that they used in the release this morning by happenstance. It has been there. It has always been there. And I would suspect that with what the NFL has gone through for the last 3 or 4 months, that there had been discussions between the Players Association and the league to say, by the way, here's what we are going to do. This is, Players Association and the league talk every day. This is what we are going to do if one of your players is involved in a situation like this. And I'm not sure that the Players Association could have very much of a pushback based on what the CBA says now. Will the PA come out and say we're in full support of Slava, and we hope that Slava gets the appropriate defense in this situation? I expect something like that to come. But at the same time, he's not missing a paycheck. He's not missing a situation where he's going to be out in the cold completely. So I think that this is one of those ones, Greg, where the letter of the agreement. And when you sign a collective player, a standard player's contract, you agree to the words of the collective bargaining agreement. And they had the right to do that under the CBA.
So you don't expect a grievance at all? You expect the PA just to say, we stand behind Slava Voynov, and we hope that he gets the best possible representation and rehabilitation, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But you don't expect an appeal?
I don't know that. It wouldn't surprise me if they do, but at the same time, they might just be better off to say we respect what the collective bargaining agreement is all about, and then follow up with everything that you just said, Jeff.
Let me ask you a follow up then. Is that Don Fear's way of doing business?
No, it's not. but this clause in my mind, as I read the CBA, this clause is so, the league is there to protect the brand, and the player signed the contract, and under the contract we have the right to do this. Let's just let bygones be bygones, and then until he's found innocent or guilty, then he can't play. I think the biggest difference to answer another part of your question, Greg, I fully believe that if Semyon Varlamov did what he did do last year in 2014, we might be having the same discussion.
Right.
So this is then a Ray Rice NHL suspension.
This is being measuring the criticism that the National Football League took, and in the view of the league being proactive to a situation that this is not a good day for hockey, period. This isn't a good day. But being proactive in a situation that says we have to protect the game, and we have to respect the player's rights to earn a living, so he's still getting paid. And until further notice, that having Slava Voynov as a distraction to the Los Angeles Kings to the National Hockey League, he's best to be away from the job.
And by asking that Donald Fehr question, obviously Merrick wants to know, he's curious how he's going to link domestic violence back to the 1994 baseball strike. Because, I mean, that is, of course, the touchstone for all things Donald Fehr.
Absolutely, Greg, absolutely amazing. We can actually start to giggle over a domestic violence situation because you can find a joke in it, but that's okay.
It's more of a joke about Don Fehr than it is domestic violence.
No, I understand. Unfortunately, and the three of us, I think, have a pretty good grasp of what goes on in our game, is that, you know, I mean, hockey's a microcosm of society, and you know, players and their families have the same issues that the three of us have issues in our families, and hundreds of thousands of families have across this continent. And you know, how many domestic violence charges were laid, you know, in Redondo Beach and laid in Southern California over the last 24 hours? And this is the one that actually just gets played up in our world. You know, this is, domestic violence is a serious issue, and the NHL feels it needs to be proactive on it. And I think that, while I'm a very liberal person and believe in innocent until proven guilty, I also believe in protecting the brand.
Do you think he could come back from this if he's found guilty of domestic violence? Do you think that there is an opportunity for a Slava Voynov to take a year or two away? I mean, obviously, depending on sentencing. And rehabilitate his image to the point where he could ever come back? Or do we feel like domestic violence is one of those non-starter, you're done here kind of things if you're found guilty?
Well, not that I like to drag up other situations, but ask Craig McTavish. Craig McTavish, who I find who is a friend, who I have a great deal of respect for, who I have seen as a player. Craig McTavish was charged with vehicular manslaughter and served time in jail, and rehabilitated himself as a person, rehabilitated himself as a player, and as a good person. So I think the answer is yes. I mean, it certainly can happen, but you have to want to do it.
Well, John, walk us through a potential process here. Let's, you know, play the fast forward game here, and let's say that Slava Voynov is found guilty of everything he's been accused of. What happens from an LA Kings point of view? What happens from an NHL point of view? What happens with a PA point of view?
Well, I actually think those phone calls are probably going on right now. I think those discussions probably started at around 5 a.m. Eastern time, after everybody was made aware of the situation at the hospital and the charge at the hospital and that whole thing. So I would suspect that there's probably some sort of discussion amongst Bill Daly and his central registry people, with David Zimmerman being involved as general counsel, to talk about, well, okay, so what if in the process he is found guilty? How do we deal with that as far as, and this is kind of, I mean, I don't really feel comfortable talking about it, because I'm more concerned about Slava Voynov and whether he serves community service, or whether does he go to jail, or does he pay a fine for what he's done, and how is his victim doing. But at the same time, from a practical hockey experience, the issue becomes, is does Voynov come off? Does he get suspended by the league, and then does his money come off the cap? And what do the Kings do? Until further notice, you know, they're basically, they can fill his roster spot, but they have to pay the cap issue when it comes to his contract. So their cap is reduced by a certain amount of money. And it might force the Kings to do something. I'm driving around and I don't have their cap dollars in front of me, but from that perspective, that's what the Kings are probably thinking about beyond worrying about Slava Voynov the person. And then this is where you sit back and say, hey, listen, you know, the law is bigger than hockey when it comes to this situation. We have to let due process take its course, and then we'll make a decision. But I'm sure those discussions, if they haven't started, will start soon.
Now, what if Slava Voynov takes a job with the Department of Player Safety? Then everything's square, right? with the salary cap, the Chris Pronger route?
Is that a rhetorical question, or is that...
That's exactly what I was thinking. Hey, John, sharp left turn here for a second to talk about the something else in hockey. It's been pretty hot. You're a guy who's has his finger on the pulse of the economics of the game a bit, and the Florida Panthers have been in the news lately. Pictures of empty seats and stories about money issues and all this jive. How do you see that situation currently? How do you see it playing out down in Florida while we have you?
Well, if the three of us owned a team and it had been in the playoffs once in 18 years and people stopped showing up, I think that we have pretty smart hockey fans. I think that the hockey fans in southern Florida have, you know, they're a lot smarter than people give them credit for, because I, the amount of times they haven't really performed in the postseason, I wouldn't want to go either. So from that perspective, maybe it's not that bad. What Viola and his group are doing is they're not giving free tickets away. And what they're saying to people is that, you know, we want you to pay and we want to be loyal to our season ticket holders. But after all the years of getting free tickets at every, you know, small shop in Broward County, it's going to take some time. And the question then becomes, Greg, is how patient can Mr. Viola and his group be? How patient can Broward County be? You know, this might be a case in the end where Broward County is saying, we don't want you in our building because we can actually make more money without you, rather than, and then therefore the whole ironclad lease goes away, and then who knows what happened. But until something says that the lease is no good, then I think that Viola's going to try to make a go of it. I mean, if this team had made the playoffs 18 years in a row and they were still drawing 7,000, then I'd be concerned. But I truly believe that if they'd made the playoffs 18 years in a row, we wouldn't be having this discussion, and the place would be, you know, they'd be averaging 16,000.
We've seen it before in Florida. John, last one for me. For years now, we've been saying, oh, look at the Edmonton Oilers. Look at all the young prospects. Look how fantastic this team is going to be one day. Meanwhile, today, TJ Brody signs a contract extension with the Calgary Flames. And when you measure up players like TJ Brody and Mark Giordano and Sean Monahan and Sam Bennett on the horizon, I don't know that I can anymore say I'd rather have Edmonton's team than Calgary's. Agree or disagree?
Agree. Now, it wasn't that long ago, Jeff, that you and I would be sitting on a desk.
I know.
Saying, oh,
I
my
know.
God, the Calgary Flames haven't had a good draft pick in a decade.
Yep.
But what it does tell you is that there is a chance to rebuild and rebuild quickly through the draft, through free agency. I know you're tired of me saying this because I say this all the time. You know, the guys that are managers and guys in the hockey world, you know, they're not smarter necessarily. That's much smarter than a lot of people in the game. Hockey is such a subjective sport when it comes to player evaluation, beyond analytics, beyond psychologists, beyond medical issues. It's one of those things where player evaluation, what you like about the guy, how you can make the guy play, what he can do for you long-term, short-term, differs between managers, differs between people in organizations. And, is Craig McTavish that much worse a general manager, say, than Jay Feaster and Brad Treliving? I don't think so. But maybe the decisions that have been made by the Oilers in certain situations about, I like this player, but the player doesn't really fit a system, maybe that's the bigger issue. Maybe that's the problem. And that's where I think Edmonton has probably made a few mistakes. They've looked at themselves in the mirror a few too many times and said, we really like this guy. And there hasn't been that dissenting voice saying, well, hold on, he doesn't do this well. Whereas when you have a guy, and I'm a Feaster fan, I'm a huge Treliving fan, when you have guys like that have lived and died in the scouting world and lived and died in situations where they've had to be really decisive and like the style of play that they want, without, and I say this respectfully, without a lot of interference from voices above them, perhaps that's the real challenge that we're dealing with in Calgary and Edmonton.
Interesting stuff. John Shannon of Sportsnet, you, sir,
thanks,
bring
John.
The knowledge always, and thank you for joining us on the show today.
Well, good, because I got to figure, you know, because, Greg, I'm always worried about you. You know, I'm always concerned. I think, you know, you got to stop it with the cigars. You know, you just got to cut the cigars out. You know, you got to be a little more health conscious. You know, we got to, you
yeah.
know, Jeffy and I, Jeffy's got me on the vegan stuff, you know.
Oh.
And,
but I think the real issue, John, nowadays is less the cigar. I moved to New York City. Finding a place to smoke a cigar in New York City has proven more difficult than I imagined. But locating pizza at 4 in the morning, surprisingly easy. So I don't know what kind of trade-off that is.
It's funny you say that, because I have a buddy that lives in New York, and he never has a problem finding a place to smoke a cigar. And Glenn Sanders seems to be able
Glenn.
To do that anywhere.
he just can't light it in his home building.
They won't let me smoke in the press box, obviously, like they will him. So, you know, that's a problem.
Well, all the best,
thanks,
boys.
Thanks, John, and eat your veggies. We'll talk soon.
Right on.
John
there
Shannon.
Go, John Shannon from Sports.
All right, so you mentioned the TJ Brody deal. That's a good deal for the team and good deal for him, obviously.
That could that could be like the bargain of a century for the Calgary Flames.
Well, it really depends on how healthy Mark Giordano is going to be, because there's some contracts that are signed. I think Jake Muzzin might have just signed one too, where you hope that the guy is going to carve out a little bit of that dough and maybe take someone on that team for a steak dinner for helping him to certain numbers and certain, you know what I mean? I mean, Giordano was a hell of an influence on Brody, and I think that's really been one of the big payoffs in this deal.
The analytics people, though, will tell you, and specifically with Muzzin and with TJ Brody as well, they are just as effective away from their superstar partner, in Brody's case, Mark Giordano, and in Muzzin's case, Drew Doughty. That's what so far, and again, it's still early in these two players' careers, but so far, the analytics side of things says, well, hold on a second here. They're not just made because of Doughty and because of Giordano. But the other thing on that point, too, is we naturally assume that if you play with Pavel Datsyuk, you're just going to be a great player because you're standing beside Pavel Datsyuk and the guy's a wizard. Same way with Mark Giordano and same way with Drew Doughty. There is some thinking that those players are actually harder to play with because they think at a very elite level.
Completely.
And if you talk to NHLers, they'll say, you know what, you'd think it was easy to play with, you know, pick a superstar player, but actually it's harder because you have to be able to think like them. And for years, that was Jaromir Jagr.
Mm-hmm.
Like for years, how many centermen did the Rangers go through before they found the right guy for Jagr? Right? They went through Drury. I mean, eventually it landed to Brandon Dubinsky, but really the only guy in New York who he could play with was Michael Nylander.
Well, yeah, Nylander, exactly. And what happened to Nylander? He broke the bank. He went to Washington, and no one ever heard of him again.
Right.
It's a special connection that you have with a player. It's like a catcher and a pitcher. Like there's certain catchers that make pitchers better just because they know how the guy wants the game called.
And knuckleball catchers.
Yep,
right?
Totally.
How many guys I can't catch, you know, this pitcher, I can't catch knuckleballs.
Yeah.
Man, if you're a knuckleball catcher, follow your pitcher all through the career.
Yeah, there you go. Three injuries recently in the National Hockey League we should talk about that happened over the weekend. Let's start with the most severe one first. That would be Patrick Nemeth out for the regular season, possibly the playoffs, with after getting tangled up with R.J. Umberger. As the players fell to the ice, Umberger's skate made contact with Nemeth's arm, cutting him, and tendon damage. Real severe laceration, Lindy Ruff said, and gone for probably the entirety of the season.
Yeah, not good. And he's been someone they have sort of great expectations for going back to last year's Calder Cup. It's to be quite honest with you, Greg, and I think I've said this before on the podcast, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. The way bodies collide now and the way we see, you know, players sort of falling over each other, I'm surprised more guys aren't getting cut severely, to be honest with you.
Victor Hedman broke our hearts. We talked on the show last week about him being a Norris guy, getting off to the amazing start, playing in every zone. The whole thing is happening for this kid right now, and of course then he breaks his hand and is out 4 to 6 weeks.
Blocking a shot. I know, and I defy you to find a nicer play so far in this early season than his pass to Steven Stamkos in the game against Montreal. The, like, 180-foot pass or whatever it was, 150-foot pass, probably has been the play of the year so far in the NHL. And blocking a shot. Oh! I don't know, man. It's like we all love shot blockers. Yay, courageous. Oh, isn't this wonderful? But when it takes out your second, depending on how you feel about Ben Bishop, third best player, it's a tough one to swallow.
cough second. And the third injury, of course, was Paul Stastny, the big free agent pickup for the St. Louis Blues. Shoulder injury. It isn't day-to-day, ladies and gentlemen. It is week-to-week on Paul Stastny.
I thought you were going to go with Martin Havlat there and the gruesome visor slash.
Oh, there was the visor scratch, too. But I'm thinking about more along the lines of, like, impactful injuries with respect to Martin Havlat.
Yeah, I mean, what do you say about Stassi? It sucks. The point about Havlat that I wanted to get to, I'm glad you brought up injuries today, is we all think the visors are the be-all and end-all. Or a lot of people think the visors are the be-all and end-all. Put on a visor, everything will be fine. Ask Marian Hossa, because I remember Hossa's visor split like that and cut open his face when he played with Ottawa. It's happened plenty of times where players' visors get smushed and you end up getting sliced. And case in point, Martin Havlat's another one. It is very unpopular what I am about to say, but if you really do fall on the side of player safety, and you say, well, these players have all used visors before. Visors should be mandatory. Okay, now we've grandfathered visors in. These players also, at one point, all played with cages and full face protection. Do we ever see a day in the NHL where that is the mandate, Greg Wyshynski, full facial protection?
No.
I used to say that about visors. I used to say the same thing about visors. And now here we are.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I imagine. I mean, that would be such a sea change. The NHLPA would all have to be on board, and I don't foresee a scenario in which the culture would change. Here's the thing,
dude.
It's an easy culture change for me, or easier culture change. That's not easy. Easier culture change to say, do this or you'll go blind, right?
I know.
It's a little bit harder sell on the full cage, I think.
You know, okay, what happens if a stick gets caught under a player's visor and it carves out his eye?
Well, they would see that as a freakish thing and not the norm. Get hit in the eye when you're not wearing a visor is the norm, you know?
I understand that. I understand that. But there are plenty of players that'll tell you, I'd rather not have a visor on when there's a stick in front of my, if there's a stick that close to my face, because the last thing you want is a stick trapped between your face and the visor. I'd rather it just bounces off my face and breaks my nose and gets trapped in there and carves out my eye. Mm-hmm. Like, there was sea change on helmets, there was sea change on visors. I'm not so sure that there won't be sea change on full gauges one day down the road.
That'd be interesting. But again, I think that would require
a
culture change. It would require a lot of different changes.
And on that, I got a punt because I have to pick up one half of the Calgary defenseman who just rang the bell today at junior kindergarten. I got to go pick up TJ.
Listen, you go. I'm going to just read this police statement for on Voinov before we go. Just to
go quick. So I want to hear it.
Redondo Beach police officers responded to the hospital and made contact with the victim at the hospital and determined that a crime of domestic violence did in fact occur in the city of Redondo Beach. The suspect in this crime was also present at the hospital and was taken into custody at the hospital and transported to Redondo Beach Police Department. The suspect was booked on charge 273.5 of the California Penal Code and was held on $50,000 bail. He was subsequently bailed out at 9 a.m. On whether Voinov drove the woman to the hospital, we haven't been able to confirm if he actually drove the victim to the hospital, although he was at the hospital when officers arrived. The extent of her injuries at this time is unknown. All I can tell you is that the injury was severe enough that it did require treatment at the Little Company of Mary emergency room. On whether she went home after the treatment, I believe she has been released from the hospital after being treated, although I do not know where she is presently located. Police would not confirm the relationship between the woman and Voinov, which is, you know, part and parcel of the confidentiality and domestic violence situations. And then was there anything else? Were there any previous domestic violence issues at the residence? Not that I've been made aware of any previous calls. On the original call to the police, the original call was received around 11:25 last night. The caller was a resident in the area. It's not known if it was a next-door neighbor or just another house on the street. They reported hearing a woman crying and screaming. The call taker tried to get more information about the exact location of the house. That was never able to be determined. Officers were sent to the area to see if they could locate anyone. No children involved, not sure on that score. And the extent of the child's involvement is unknown at this time, but it's being looked into by detectives. There was a child in the home, they said.
Oh, good Lord.
Other horrible wrinkles to this. All right, I got about it. That's all from the OC Register. Let me go ahead and punt this thing too in a second. I know we have a couple of. I wanted to read a couple of emails that we've gotten about this.
Do some acuity. Hey,
you go.
We'll acuity.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. He's a father of the year. You hear him rustling his things. I assume he's going to pick up his child, not just retiring to the Stouffville sauna in Merrick's basement next to his books for little R&R. Rub and relax. This is from I. Rosenthal. I think the NHL made the right move with the suspension. It was good to see the Kings' statement in support of that decision. What's not good is seeing that sentence and realizing that proper response to violence has become something to be proud of a team about. Exactly right. Jeez. Low bar in today's sports world. Off the Reddit page, off the subreddit r/MVSW, Professor Borden, it was handled like an organization. They clearly watched the Ray Rice situation with extreme scrutiny. I think it was handled about as perfect as it could be. Better safe than sorry. This is from G-Dog. The NHL was very reactionary to the mess caused by the NFL here, which is why you had the disconnect between what happened now and the Varlamov case. I almost think you have to throw out the Varlamov case in this sports culture since it drastically changed the Ray Rice situation. Like John Shannon said, if there was communication between the NHL and the PA on this, and the goal line, for lack of a better term, had moved on what to do in these situations, then that makes sense. But if it hadn't been agreed upon, and a year ago they let a guy play, and now they're suspending him without even a court date or a court appearance, again, from a labor perspective, I see this differently than I do from a moral perspective, from a league perspective. Moral perspective, suspend them both. League perspective, it's got to happen because of the culture. Labor perspective, well, you did one thing once, now you're doing another thing, but you've never actually established a cause for it or said that the way you handled the previous one was wrong. Why you have to be mad, _ writes in, the NHL and the Kings should pull a Baltimore Ravens and offer a swap-out Voinoff jerseys for replacements. While it hurts the league and the Kings' wallets, there was a precedent set by the NFL on how to handle the situation. I will say that having been to Los Angeles a few times, there are more than a few Voinoff jerseys in circulation, by the way. Not as many Doughties or things like that, but there's a few that are in circulation. Let's see here. Phil Ralston, Slava plays in the league again. Sports trump morality. Public, this is the Ray Lewis thing, of course, that Snoop was involved in a murder. This is true. Let's see here. That's about it. There are people that apparently think I was joking about a domestic violence, which obviously, if you listen to this show, you know that I wasn't. But please keep following the show on Twitter rather than listening to it. Good times. Anyways, that's the show for today. Keep on this Voinoff thing on Puck Daddy as it breaks. Obviously, looking for anything insofar as a court appearance and things of that nature. The Kings have supported the NHL in the suspension, which is a good thing. And hopefully we learn more about this, and hopefully the victim's okay. Sounds like she did leave the hospital, was discharged last night, but the extent of her injuries haven't been reported yet. So there you have it. Thanks to John Shannon for dropping knowledge about all things. And we shall talk to you on tomorrow. Bye.